Good morning and welcome to another edition of the Nats Hot Stove Show on Sports Radio 106.7 The Fan. Good morning, I'm Pete Medhurst, and we have news. If you missed it, late yesterday, Barry Svrluga first to report that Ryan Zimmerman is indeed coming back for one more season. It's a one-year deal, $2 million in base salary, an opportunity with $3 million worth of incentives for the Nationals first baseman. And look, injuries, there's no question injuries have not been kind to Ryan Zimmerman. Obviously, the lightning in the bottle 3 years ago when he had an amazing season hitting 36 home runs for the Nationals, and a guy that's going to go give Davey Martinez as many at-bats and as many games as his body will allow him in 2020. And sure, we can joke around a little bit about the potential of the AARP infield at times, especially at the corners, if as Drubal Cabrera is playing third, Zimmerman's playing first, and Howie Kendrick is playing at second base. And that's certainly a lineup you could see at some point during the course of the season for a few games as the Nationals make their way through the 2020 season. But as heritage players go, when he made his debut in September of 2005 at the age of 20, with the Washington Nationals as a face of a franchise that needed it. They were the new team. He was the new hope, and certainly has given everything he's had to this Washington Nationals organization through the years. And for Ryan Zimmerman to be able to, you know, hopefully go out on his own terms. If he has a strong season, who's to say that he couldn't come back in 2021? But you never know. But at least now he's going to get an opportunity to go out on his own terms. And you can only hope that the body cooperates, because this is a guy that has been so unselfish for this organization. He and his wife, Heather, have been an unbelievable force in the community. The Zims Foundation, with the tremendous work that they do from a philanthropic standpoint. And this is a guy that has been a Washington National through and through, one of the originals, the original number one pick, fourth overall in that draft in 2005. And now Ryan Zimmerman going to come back on a one-year deal, $2 million in base salary, three worth of incentives for Zimmerman coming up next season. And certainly, you know, you look around the infield now, you've got a combination of Zim, who can play at first, Howie Kendrick, who can play essentially first, second, and third, Sterling Castro at second base can also play third. Now, the one thing you look around the infield, and, you know, at this point, if you're going to spell Trey Turner for a day or so, or even a few innings, that's probably going to have to be Asdrubal Cabrera now, because as Mark Zuckerman pointed out, I think, alertly yesterday on Twitter, what this probably means, it's going to be very difficult, barring injury, certainly at this point, likely for guys like Wilmer Defoe to make this club and Adrian Sanchez. Now, they would be the likely fill-ins for a Trey Turner if Turner were to take a game or some innings off. And you can't certainly predict that Trey Turner is going to be able to play 162, as we have seen. And if something does occur with Turner from an injury standpoint, at this point you would probably think Cabby's the guy over there at shortstop for the Nationals in a pinch, or obviously they could use Carter Kieboom and certainly put Cabby over at third base. So there are options, and you know, the one thing you got to hope, though, right now is Carter Kieboom looks the part at the major league level. Because if he does, this now gives Davey Martinez the ultimate flexibility he needs. If he's not, and then that flexibility is compromised, a smidge at least, with you know, Cabrera probably having to go be your everyday third baseman at that point. So spring training gets very interesting now to watch what the Nationals are going to do in the infield. And certainly, you know, for guys like Defoe and Adrian Sanchez, good dudes, good teammates. Guys have been terrific with the roles that have been asked of them. It's always difficult to be that guy in a reserve role. But now, as the 40-man is set. Those guys are certainly on it, but competing for a job in the 25 now is the regular season. With spring training gets set to get going now in less than a month down in West Palm. We know Ryan Zimmerman will be back in the fold for the Washington Nationals. Going around the league, obviously the Mets now turning to the quality control guy, Luis Rojas, to be the man at manager for the Metropolitans. And a couple of schools of thought here on this. Felipe Alou's son, ironically enough, and a couple of schools of thought here. You've got a team that has got some ego on it, certainly with some veteran players, especially pitchers. And, you know, you kind of take an unheralded guy here in Rojas out of a quality control position and elevate him to manager. Now, from a managerial standpoint, there's no question he is a neophyte at this point for the New York Mets. But at the same time, if you go and get a high-profile guy, you know, like a Dusty Baker, a Buck Showalter, that are available out there, you know, maybe just this Mets club, and obviously they tried it with a Mickey Callaway, and it didn't necessarily work. But Rojas has been a guy that's been in the organization. He knows all the pieces, knows where the bodies are buried, and perhaps, just perhaps, you know, a bit of a sleeper here in this managerial turn for the New York Metropolitans within this division. The Atlanta Braves signed Marcell Ozuna. Danny and I talked about this on Grant and Danny this week when I filled in for Grant. You know, Ozuna's a guy that represents the potential for some power, a guy that, you know, did not have his kind of a season in terms of average last year for the St. Louis Cardinals. And now the Atlanta Braves have some interesting things of their own from a roster standpoint to kind of sort out here. Do they go and try to make a deal that involves an Austin Riley, perhaps even throw a blockbuster deal together for Nolan Arenado? History with Liberty Media, the owner there, doesn't seem like they would be too comfortable taking on the contract of Nolan Arenado at $260 million. Now, that's not to say that they couldn't change their mind, make an investment in a big-time player there. With Arenado, he'd make Atlanta very, very difficult to deal with. The thing with the Braves that still I look at is the fact that they didn't re-sign Dallas Keuchel, and I think Keuchel's a guy that would have certainly helped them in the rotation. And as things shape up with the way the Nats' rotation is, with the way the Mets' rotation is, you know, the Phillies add Wheeler. You know, you look at Atlanta. Perhaps some youth now in that rotation, even more now, will be counted upon as this season gets going here. But certainly they have the pieces. They've got some flexibility if they need it. They've got the pieces to make a deal if they want to do that. But salary, I think, will mean something in terms of that with the Atlanta Braves. Marlins, of course, adding a guy like a Jonathan Villar. They're going to be a headache. They're not going to be a great team. They're going to be improved, though, I think. I think the roster's better going into this season. And the Phillies, who, of course, made the big splash with Bryce Harper last year, not necessarily as huge a splash here in this offseason, but, you know, still the facts remain. Who's going to, you know, do the job consistently in that bullpen for them over the course of 162 and even the depth of the rotation? It's helped by Wheeler. But when you look around the division, certainly right now their pitching overall would have to, at least in the rotation, take a back seat to the Nationals, the Braves, and the Mets at this point. Doesn't mean they can't. Certainly they're going to score some runs. We know that. But the question is going to be, you know, if they score six, there's a chance some days they're going to give up seven, and that bullpen is going to be the culprits. Based on the overall setup of it right now. But that's a look around the East. And, of course, the big news, Ryan Zimmerman back in the fold with the Washington Nationals, 1 year, $2 million, and an opportunity for incentives to get him three more and a total of $5 million in the 2020 season. When we come back, some of the best of from Nats Winterfest, our conversation with Hunter Strickland, and I think you'll be interested in his answer when we asked him and this was one of the more fascinating things of Winterfest, when I asked him about the trade to Washington and obviously the history with Bryce Harper that the fans know about. Oh, by the way, his wife was 9 months pregnant at the time. Wait till you hear the answer from Hunter Strickland coming up next. Chris Russell's conversations with Chip Hale and Trey Turner as well as part of the Nats Hot Stove Show on a Saturday morning. Ryan Zimmerman back in the fold for the Nats on 106.7 The Fan.
Welcome back to the Nats Hot Stove Show. Our conversation from Nats Fest with Nats reliever Hunter Strickland.
What is the coolest thing you've been able to fit in so far in this shortened window because of the fact that you all won a world championship here in the offseason?
Well, first to say that the shortened offseason was we had a good reason for that.
Yeah.
I'll take that every year. You know, but for me personally, you said it, I love the outdoors. I run a waterfowl hunting company mm-hmm. with my brother. So we actually just got back from a trip to Cape Cod area where we were hunting some sea ducks. So that was definitely an experience and something new for us.
I was going to say, based on the Instagram photo, as you can follow Hunter on different aspects of social media, it looked like a pretty fruitful trip for you guys there. When you do that, does that allow you to relax, but yet also keep the competitive juices flowing? Because I know when you go with other guys, there is a certain level of competitiveness
right.
to some of these trips.
No, absolutely. You don't want to get outshot by any means. So there is some competitiveness there and whatnot. But, as far as the stressfulness, the last day was, it got kind of sketchy. There was a storm rolled in. So we didn't know, honestly, if we were going to make it back. So luckily we're here and it all went well.
Everybody's going to analyze what happened last year and correlate it to what's coming up in the season of 2020. I mentioned this to Paul Menhart, too, is the fact that now, this bullpen with some of the acquisitions and the people you brought back, getting Huddy back in the fold, I think, was big. Yourself, and at times the way this bullpen struggled last year, to have a complete roster full, that should take some of the pressure off, I would think, this year.
I think so. I mean, you can't speak highly enough of some of these guys, and we actually have added arms. We got Will Harris coming in, and obviously he's done a tremendous job the past few years with the Astros. So I think from top to bottom, I think the bullpen is pretty stacked, and we have options, and guys just aren't there, people don't really care about their role. They're open to whenever Davey calls their name, and I think that's what goes a long ways.
How often do you think Will Harris is going to see the video of the home run hit by Howie Kendrick in the stadium this year?
I mean, it's probably a few times, unfortunately. And I hate that for him, but, I'm sure he's excited to be here. He wouldn't have signed here for, without any other reason. So,
what is it like, Hunter, to be able to start the season with – this obviously you were hoping to play an entire season with Seattle or San Francisco right. in those years, but what is it like to be able to be 100% healthy, right?
Right, yes,
and
sir.
To be able to start a season like where you are right now and feeling how you're feeling?
I mean, it's what you dream about, without a doubt. And I said it when I came over, 2 days in, which was hard to really imagine. But right. I told my wife, I said, this is one of the funnest teams I've played with by far, 2 days in. And then, a month or two later, I told her, I said, I got a dream that we're going to win this thing. And sure enough, we did. I mean, that's, so it's just, I think everybody's relationships on and off the field goes a long ways. And, I'm really excited for 2020.
Why is it the funnest? People talk about the camaraderie in this team, and you've been on world championship teams. What was different about this team that made it? Is it the lack of egos, I guess, everybody kind of playing together? What were some of the things that were different?
I mean, that's definitely one without a doubt. Like I said earlier, it doesn't matter when your name gets called as far as the bullpen aspect, everybody's ready to go. And I think that correlates between the whole team, on and off the field and, throughout the clubhouse. I don't think anybody was pressing, and what Davey said is just go 1-0 today. I think everybody really took that to heart and that's what we focused on.
What is that feeling like, though, when you all start to build that momentum? We see it in sports and all different sports. A team gets rolling at the end of the season. Tennessee Titans are doing that right now
right.
In the NFL. But what was it like inside that clubhouse as you all could feel that momentum building? And obviously you knew you had some rather large roadblocks in the playoffs right. to get through some quality teams. But You, as that started to build, could you all feel that special feeling coming with this particular group?
I think so. You know, I think that obviously the fan base plays a huge part into that, because once the fans started believing into it, the crowd gets a lot louder. You know what I mean? And I think that we definitely don't not notice that. But as far as the belief and confidence in the clubhouse, I think everybody, like I said, had it from the get-go. And, you know, obviously it doesn't hurt to just have the momentum going your way at some point.
I always tell people that to win titles, you have to be good. Obviously you guys were, but you have to be lucky too. Last year, you win 5 elimination games. You think about the amount of runs scored from the 7th inning on, the amount of runs scored with 2 outs.
Right.
I mean, a lot of things have to go right for you to win it all.
Absolutely. Some things are meant to be, and that was definitely one of them. And I'm obviously grateful to be a part of that. I would say more personally, I would say blessed more than lucky.
Yeah.
That's just the way I would look at it personally.
And you mentioned Will Harris, and as a reliever, you know what it's like to unfortunately give up a home run in a critical game.
Unfortunately,
yeah. You have to be kind of a psychology major too, right? You have to learn how to erase those things. Is that part of it, the way that Paul Menhart treats you and the way Davey Martinez treats you, that when something bad happens, you learn from that and you move forward quickly?
Absolutely.
You don't let it bother you. What are some of the things you go through as a pitcher when you give up a hit that you don't want to give up?
Right. Well, I mean, the mental part of the game is definitely the hardest part, and that's what we're constantly on a day-to-day basis trying to do and trying to fine-tune and just realize, you know, and we're humans, you know, we have families, we understand what's going on, you know, and we're not perfect. So, you know, it hurts when things like that happen, because nobody wants to go out there and get beat. But that's what adversity is going to make you better, and that's what you just got to learn from and figure out a way to bounce back.
Who got on the phone with Will really in the offseason and said, you couldn't beat us, join us?
Not me, buddy, not me.
You know, Hunter, obviously, as you all head into this 2020 campaign, are we, as media members and as fans, are we going to make more of the 3-batter minimum rule that's coming this season than you all will as players? Because usually when you come out there, especially if you start an inning, you're hoping you only face 3 batters anyway. But are we going to make more of this than what it actually is? Or does it change mindset and preparation depending on what inning and obviously what part of the lineup you may face for against a certain team?
From a player's perspective, I don't think it's going to change our mindset too much. Because, like you said, we're you know, to get the outs that we're called to get. Whether that's a righty or lefty, whoever's in the box, it doesn't matter. Whenever Davey, they call our name, that's what we're supposed to do until they take the ball from our hands. So I think it more or less is more of a challenge on their end, is how they're going to kind of manipulate and set up the bullpen and figure out, you know, who they want to face with which hitters are coming up or whatnot like that. But from a pitcher's perspective, I don't think it's going to hurt us any.
You know, at one point, to this fan base, and this is the beauty of sports theater, to this fan base at one point, you may have been public enemy 1 or 1A. But to now see these people...
I don't know what you're talking about.
Right. That's where I'm going, right there.
Yeah.
That's exactly right. But to see these people now, and obviously to see this clubhouse welcome you and see you as part of the family now, is that part of the sports theater and part of a career as it goes on, especially for a guy who comes out of the bullpen? Because we see bullpen guys pitch for sometimes 10, 11 different teams in Major League Baseball.
Right. No, I mean, it's when my wife, I was on a bus to, you know, head to Texas, and my wife was 9 months pregnant, and we got the call. Hey, you got traded. And we're like, well, to who? And it was right at the deadline, obviously. And then I had to tell her it was a national. She just she started crying. She was like, oh, God, what are we going to do? You know, like, she didn't know what to expect. But from day one, it's gone full circle. I mean, it's been tremendous. And I can't thank you guys enough, just for welcoming me, my family, and everybody here. So it's been awesome.
Yeah, great stuff.
And Mike Rizzo knows talent, you know. That stuff was in the past. He knows what he got.
Yeah.
Thank you.
We know that.
Absolutely.
But sometimes you got to tell those people that.
That's,
you know,
true.
Let's give it up for Hunter Strickland, everybody, joining us here.
Thank you.
At Nats Winterfest.
Fantastic conversation with Nats right-handed reliever Hunter Strickland. Coming up, Chris Russell's conversation with Chip Hale and Trey Turner. That's all coming up on the best of the Nats Hot Stove Show from Winterfest, as we bring you the Nats Hot Stove Show each and every Saturday right here, 8 to 9 on Sports Radio 106.7 The Fan.
Joining us right now out of the chute is somebody we had a chance 13 months ago. We had a chance to talk in this very same location, and he wasn't a World Series champion then. He is one now.
That's right.
Chip Hale, how are you, sir?
I'm great.
Congratulations.
Great
to see you again.
Appreciate it.
Appreciate you coming by. How does it feel? I mean, I guess that's the most ridiculous, obligatory question that I've got to ask, right?
It feels great. I mean, every time, I live back in Arizona, so when we got our jerseys from the last game, we brought it home, and I have it hung up in a little trophy room we have, and every time I walk by that, I just get a big smile on my face, and it's surreal. I mean, obviously, we've kind of turned the page and get ready for this year, but that always kind of brings me back to it, and I think, you know, just the most amazing moment to me, to be frank with you. I mean, it was great winning. It was a grind. The families together that whole month was great, but just coming back and seeing the fans in the parade made it really – that was the best thing for me. I never would have thought that was it, but just seeing the reaction of all of our great fans, it was unbelievable.
So that was better than being in the dugout game 7 at Minute Maid Park and winning it?
Well, I would say the moment we won it was probably the best, but just seeing how happy you could make a community and bring people together, it was really cool.
And that is, I mean, look, all communities are like that. But, you know, now I covered the Capitals during their Stanley Cup run. I don't know if we talked about that last year. And now you guys have done this. It really is. It's a baseball thing. It's an individual accomplishment. It's a team accomplishment. It's a franchise accomplishment. But it is really a community accomplishment, because a lot of these fans have been coming to this ballpark since it opened back at RFK before this ballpark was even open, spending thousands and thousands of dollars every year, blood, sweat, tears, all of that stuff to support this team and to give you guys home field advantage. And now that's your gift back to them.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it was just like I said, just seeing the smiles and the joy that we brought, and just, you know, every day we go out that ballpark, it is a great home field advantage. It's getting better and better every year. Mm-hmm. And obviously it will, you know, we realize where we are. This is the hub. So there's going to be a ton of people from all over the country, all over the world. So sometimes there's some fans from other ballparks and other fans, but our fans override them.
I think it's going to be a lot better, even better than it has been in the regular season, this upcoming regular season, because, you know, you win a championship and fans are more likely to come out and support and be consistent in that regard. Chip Hale is with us of the World Series champion Washington Nationals on 106.7 The Fan. I'm Chris Russell. So tell me, you know, so much has been made out of the 19-31 start.
Right.
When I talked to you last year, again, at this set, you guys weren't even sure if you were going to have Bryce Harper. He ultimately leaves. You go to spring training, and things seem different, and everybody was jacked up about the new season, rightfully so, to get back to that playoff perch, and then you start 19-31. How did you guys stay as positive and as focused as you were to dig out of that hole?
Well, a lot of it, you know, for me, a lot of the credit goes to our veteran players, especially when we started to – we got the Gerardo Parras. We got Asdrubal Cabrera. These guys brought, you know, some legitimacy. Guys who'd been to the playoffs, guys who'd been around, and just sort of settled things down. We as coaches, we kept working. You know, we brought guys out early. We started to do some special drills with different players, especially the younger guys, and just tried to take their mind off of all these, you know, mounting losses, and just let's get back to basics. You know, sort of the process. You know, we always hear that, whether it's in school or business, you know, you always want to worry about the process more than what happens in the end.
Process more important than the process is just as important.
Right. Well,
is that fair?
For me, you have to put all your energy into the process,
right?
Because a lot of times there's things you can't control in a game.
Sure.
Davey stayed positive. We also knew, I mean, I'm not going to lie to you, when we went on the road trip from Philadelphia to Milwaukee and to L.A., we really were struggling. But we were playing, and the guys were giving everything they had.
Mm-hmm.
But we had, you know, no Rendon, no Turner, no Soto. And we knew once that group got back together, and if we were able to stay here, you know, as a coach and a manager, you're always worried about, is this going to be our last day?
Yeah.
And so we said, once these guys get back together and we get Max and Steven and Patrick and Annabelle rolling, we thought we could make a little bit of a run, and we knew our schedule would come sort of into our favor. We played some really tough series early. So Once that started to happen and things started to roll, you saw what happened.
So you kind of admitted something that I was curious about. You know, usually every coach that I've covered in the NFL and in hockey and baseball as well over my career said, I don't think about all that stuff. But you're a human being, right?
Right.
You guys had to be thinking, especially because Lil, you know, obviously was no longer here. I mean, you had to be thinking that at some point the patience was going to run out and that you had to find a way to quick hit that switch. So for you, it was maybe the combination of health, staying positive, the process,
right,
and also that schedule. It wasn't one thing. It was four or five things,
right,
kind of coming together
at the same time. It was. And it's not, I mean, as in our position, we understand what our job
is.
And we understand when you take these jobs, it's all about expectations.
Sure.
And we had the roster and the payroll that we should have been competing better. And so once we got those guys that were actually making that money back on the field, we started to compete better.
Yeah.
And it showed. And it's about timing, too. And we got hot at the right time. And, you know, the wild card game just sort of set us off.
That wild card game, were you guys tight because of all that history? Not that you guys were all a part of it, your staff,
right,
Davey's staff that you're a part of. And obviously some of the players had changed, but some of the players had been here. 14 was in San Francisco, but 12, 16, 17,
right,
all that had come before you. The city was kind of on edge. Did you guys feel tight up until that eighth inning rally with Soto and everybody contributing, or was it a different feel inside the clubhouse and the dugout?
I don't think inside of our world there was any tightness.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there was any, there was a lot of talk about it. And I know that the fans, the ownership, there was a lot of nervousness about, you know, this is a tough, you know, situation.
Sure.
We didn't feel that way. We were playing a really good team who we just played a couple weeks before here, and so we knew it was going to be a dogfight, and to win it the way we did was incredible against, you know, arguably the best closer in baseball last year in Hader. And Juan doing
that. He's nasty,
isn't
he?
Yeah, he is nasty. And for Juan to do that, the ball to take a funky hop, it just was a special thing. And I think it sort of showed guys on the team, too, like, hey, this is a special time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, for that ball to do that was amazing.
Was there an underrated moment in the journey, either in the postseason or in the regular season, something that maybe doesn't get a lot of credit or talked about?
Right.
In your eyes,
I think that
meant something.
Yeah, I think there were the few underrated moments were all the runners that Max and Steven stranded in Houston, you know, early in the game.
Yeah,
I mean, those games, 6 and 7, both could have been early blowouts.
Mm-hmm.
And you saw, so
that's a great
people
point.
Always say to me, what, you know, guys couldn't win a game in D.C.
Right.
in the World Series and was unfortunate. But if you look at the way the series went in Houston, we got all the hits at the key moments with two outs, a homer, like Tony home run late in the eighth, or, you know, these hits, we didn't get one here.
That first inning in game six to kind of break the ice, Trey leads off with an infield single and you guys get a run.
Right.
And I know you had to do more than that, but it kind of like maybe gets you guys back
in
your group.
It never happened here in D.C. They got them all.
Yeah.
If you think about the Astros got all their big hits here in this stadium. And they couldn't get that big one to put us away in one, or it was game two. It was pretty much a blow up. But game one and then 6 and 7, both they had many opportunities to put that game away.
Yeah. How does this? You know, I know there's a lot of shuffling in your guys' roles and on the coaching staff, but in the lineup there'll be some shuffling, obviously, because no Tony. How does this team kind of make up for that? Maybe not to put too much pressure individually on everyone to make up for Anthony, assuming that, and I know you can't talk about this, that a guy like a Donaldson or somebody else big, proven, I guess, is at third base. How do you not put too much pressure on yourself to kind of make up for that production?
Well, the big thing for me is our veterans, all the veterans we signed is gonna be very important because they know how not to do that.
Right.
The young players like Juan, we have to be very careful with that situation. But if you think back, you know, Juan hit behind Tony. So it wasn't like he had this permanent, you know, when Howie played, he hit behind him or Zim would hit behind him. So we have a number of veteran players that can sort of, you know, cushion that a little bit for us. And it's the old thing, if they think back to the Moneyball movie or the book, you know, when they lost Giambi with the A's, mm-hmm. they sort of decided, okay, we're not going to get someone to get 110 RBIs or 120 RBIs, but we can get two or three guys that can get, you know, 50 or 60
right.
that'll play these positions.
Right.
And if you look at the way things are lining up, as you say, if there's no more signings, we have a number of guys that can play third, number of guys can play second, number of guys can play first, and they really need to be moved around. They need to not play necessarily 6-7 days a week
right.
at their age. For them to be at their best.
The versatility,
yeah.
the interchangeability.
So the versatility and the veteran presence, I think, will help, you know, dispel all those issues you're talking about.
One last one for you before we let you go. Chip Hale with us here at Nats Winterfest. Part of the World Series champions, in case you guys didn't realize that this is a World Series championship team now. Davey Martinez obviously went through that health scare, but he's so positive. He's so energetic. He's so, you know, like the message seems the same from afar. I'm not in the clubhouse
right.
every day. What is your experience been like, you know, with him? Because you've managed at this
right.
level. I mean, you've seen the grunt, you know, you've been a baseball lifer. What has that experience been
yeah.
like?
Well, he was very steady.
Yeah.
I think that's the word to use. He was steady even through the losses. You know, and there was no panic. And he just is, you know, he's got a lot of energy, like you say, but he doesn't get too high or too low in the clubhouse. He's very good with each player individually, talking to him, letting him know what their role is and sort of just staying straight with him,
yeah.
you know, instead of, you know, telling him one thing and doing another. So, those are the things as a manager that are sometimes aren't easy, you know, when guys want to come in and talk about their role,
mm-hmm.
And you're honest with them. Sometimes it doesn't go too well. And Davey has a real good way of giving him that news.
Congratulations,
thank
man.
You.
I'm very happy
thank
for you.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Well, I'm happy for everybody here.
Let's
thank
give him
guys.
A big hand, Chip Hale. Of course, not manager. Part of the coaching staff here of the World Series champion Washington Nationals. We're at Nats Winterfest. This is always a cool event, right, to mix and mingle with mm-hmm. the fans, see some of the exhibits, and you see the crowd that we have jammed in here at the yep. team store. I mean, it's so cool, right? You're a baseball player. You get to do a lot of cool things, but it's nice to do fun events like
yeah,
this.
You know, it's the passion from your own fan base, which is
yeah.
nice. So, obviously, these are, you know, our super fans and our guys that follow us, you know, from day one all the way till the end, each and every year. So it's nice getting a chance to meet them and talk to them and you know, interact with them. So we're having fun, and hopefully these next 2 days we get to, you know, meet as many people as possible.
How many times have you woken up since October 31st or whatever it was and said, holy heck, I'm a World Series champion?
It's still weird. Like, I'll see highlights every once in a while.
Yeah.
I'll turn on a TV, see highlights, and I'm like, oh yeah, I forgot about that. But you know, it's great. I feel like I see the replay of Hudson throwing his glove
yeah.
like every fifth day or something. I'm like it's a nice reminder that you know, we accomplished it.
I'll never feel that way. Most people will never feel that way. What was that moment like as you realized, again, oh my gosh, we did it?
Well, yeah, it's weird. I said when we did it, you know, 29 teams end their year on a loss for
mm-hmm.
the most part, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, at least the ones that made the playoffs, I guess I should say. But to, like, end your year on a win and then be done is kind of weird.
Yeah.
It's like almost like a dream a little bit, and we get to obviously get to party and have fun. But you know, when the parade came, that was really special seeing, you know, everybody out there for that, and kind of hit home.
World Series champion shortstop Trey Turner with us here on 106.7 The Fan. You know, you're used to being cheered, but that's got to feel good, right? I mean, Let me ask you from this standpoint, and I might be screwing up the timeline here, so forgive me. I remember making this point on the radio that night post-game. You guys were down in Houston, but I believe it was game six. You're up. First inning, you guys had lost the three games here, and you beat out an infield single. And you guys get a run. I think it was on a sack fly. Tony, I think, had a sack fly or something like that. To me, that was such an underrated moment, and I'm not trying to put you in a weird spot to talk about yourself, but I'm going to ask you to talk about yourself. If I'm right on that timeline, I thought that was an underrated moment in you guys being able to win game six and seven to kind of break the ice after what happened here.
Yeah, so for me, just in general, I think everyone envisions getting the walk-off hit or the
yeah.
homer and whatnot, but if you're going to win, you're going to have a lot of guys do a lot of different things. So if you go back, you can see countless at-bats where, you know, Eaton maybe bunt somebody
mm-hmm.
over, or somebody hits behind a runner and moves them over, or sack fly, and, you know, it may not necessarily be the, you know, the home run, which everyone wants, or the strikeout, or whatever it is, but maybe it's a defensive play. So for me, it's, you don't know when your time is going to be or what it's going to be, but you just need to be ready and prepared. And, you know, I feel like I made some good defensive plays for us throughout the series. And, you know, maybe that was, you know, my job. It was that, and looking back at it, and, you know, it wasn't hitting 500 and doing all the stuff, but it was, you know, doing the small things. So, you know, I think you could look back at all 25 guys, even, you know, I guess we used probably more than 25 guys, but somebody did something somewhere that wasn't that big, but maybe, you know, played a role in us.
Was I right, though, on that? Do you remember that or no?
I
think it was game six, first inning. Because I remember making a big point.
I usually remember that stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it was just like a little thing, and I was like, oh, you know, Trey, like, not broke the ice. I mean, obviously, you didn't do it by yourself. I'm pretty sure I was right. Anyway, I don't want to waste that much time. Either way, it was an important for you guys to, of course, get that game started and then ultimately win and go on to game seven. Now, take me back to when you got injured on that Tuesday night. Bryce is back, the ballpark is juiced, and, you know, all the injuries then start. How mentally frustrating was that to see your season start, you get ready, you spend the whole offseason, spring training, and then something unfortunate again, and something similar happened 2 years ago where you lost a lot of time?
Yeah, that's what's unfortunate is, you know, it's a hit-by-pitch, which happens all the time, but when you get a broken bone, you just got to sit and wait for it to heal, which sucks, and you can't rehab it, you can't do anything, and it also doesn't feel like it's self-inflicted, you know, for the most part. Obviously, you know, you don't blame the guy who threw the ball, but, you know, you feel like it's not your fault, and you got to deal with it. I mean, you got to put it behind you. If you don't, then you're just going to be miserable. And, you know, for me, I always try to be positive, try to enjoy, you know, each and every day. And I don't want to sit there and focus on something that I can't necessarily control. So, you know, it's tough, but ended up working out pretty good.
You hit .298 during the regular season last year. You know, again, obviously less at bats than normally you would have, but you've been a part of this young core. Did you see what ultimately, like, do baseball players think about, hey, you know what, we've got this really young core, obviously Tony, and we'll get to him in a second, Juan, Bryce, you had here for a while, great pitching, we could be a World Series team, or did you just operate like that, you know what, if it happens, it happens, I won't think about it, I'm just playing baseball? How did you kind of approach mentally what you guys were building towards, if that makes sense?
I think it's both. For me, I thought last year and probably this year, you know, too, since we have a lot of guys back, but we just had a lot of competitors, guys that won't give up at bats. And I know we talked about it a lot last year, but, you know, Juan's grinding out every single at bat. Eaton's grinding out every single at bat. And we had Howie, you know, Tony, and just up and down the lineup, we had a ton of guys that just compete. And, you know, I think that's how you get to, you know, that World Series, how you, you know, make the postseason, is you got to compete every day. If you don't, if you just think you're going to get there, then it's probably not going to happen. So, you know, we take pride in each and every day. We try to win. We don't want to lose because we take it a little personal, and then we can also move on. And I think that's the veteran part of the clubhouse, is we can move on pretty quick.
Back to the finger again. You know, I remember a close-up in the World Series. I think it was game six or seven. I can't remember, Fox. Yeah. And it was kind of swollen, right? And it was kind of blown up. I mean, I didn't realize it was still that bad. Maybe I, you know, because I'm not around you guys every day. I'm mostly in the studio. How bad was it still then? And how difficult was it to do everything that you're required to do?
Yeah, it sucked. Yeah, it was after the World Series. I mean, I didn't want it to be the reason or the excuse or whatever it was. I didn't want to talk about it because, to me, it didn't matter. I felt like I could help out, and I didn't want that to be a reason for anything, whether it was I didn't make a play or I didn't hit well or we lost because of this or that. So I didn't want to talk about it. But, you know, I had surgery, and I couldn't really do normal day stuff. Obviously, I could hit and throw, and it wasn't that bad, but normal things were a pain, and then get the surgery, and I, you know, I have a lot more range of motion now, so I did start hitting. I can hit with 10 fingers again. Whether I do or I go back to nine is the better question, because I liked hitting with nine, but it's better. It's a lot better, and, you know, it's nice to put that behind me.
When you look to your right this year and you don't see Tony Rendon, and you know what he meant, obviously, to this organization, and nobody's unhappy that he got paid and he has gone on to a different organization, but how weird is that going to be for you?
Yeah, for sure. He's the only third baseman I've known, obviously, and he plays every single day. You see him all the time, so, you know, one of my good buddies, and I'm happy for him. I'm glad he got a ton of money and, you know, got a chance to, you know, take care of his family and whatnot. So, you know, want to talk to him again and see how he's doing. But it's going to be weird playing next to somebody else. But, you know, that's baseball. That's the business side. You got to get past that. And hopefully, you know, we got somebody to, you know, fill those shoes.
You got a little bit of money recently, huh? All right. Settling this arbitration thing.
Yeah, I guess so.
Are you of the thought that, you know, like this arbitration process is weird, right? Because nobody wants to go to arbitration because then you got to start slinging some dirty laundry and often teams and players. Are you one of those guys that, like, Atlanta locked up a bunch of their young guys early, pre-arbitration, pre-free agency? Are you of that thought process, or are you, and I'm not asking for, like, your actual plan, but just, like, are you of like, secure the future and do something that might be beneficial for actual plan, but just, like, are you of like, secure the future and do something that might be beneficial for both sides, or are you a play it out like Tony and Bryce did kind of guy?
I think I'm both. I think you can do both. Mm-hmm. You know, signing early deal, I don't think it's a bad thing as long as you know what you are getting and or giving up, and mm-hmm. vice versa. I don't think going to free agency is a bad thing unless you know what you're kind of risking or trying to obtain. So, mm-hmm. You know, I don't fault anybody for making a decision as long as they know, you know, what it's going to cost and what the risk is and what the reward is. And for me, I would love to play here my entire career, but you know, I'm not the decision maker. I'm not the decision maker. I also feel like, you know, I think I can play better baseball than I have. So don't want to sell myself short and just continue to listen, see what happens. And when I have the most information I think I need to make a decision, I'll make a decision.
One last thing for you, because I got to let you go, because you only have about 5,000 fans here waiting to greet you. 30 seconds. What's the coolest thing you've been able to do since becoming a World Series champion?
I don't know. I think the parade was very cool, to be honest, and not just kissing butt, but the parade was very, very cool, something I'll always remember. But I don't think it's because I was World Series champion, but me and my wife just took a trip to Wyoming, and we did dog sledding, which was
nice.
Unbelievable.
Wow.
Yeah, it was.
So I did a rod type stuff.
Yes,
or no?
That's actually,
wow.
Yeah. And
so you did that?
I didn't tell the dogs to do anything. I just stood and watched.
Oh, you watched
our guy.
Okay.
Well, yeah, I rode the sled.
I gotcha.
But we did a little hike, and the dogs were awesome, and it was cool to see.
Oh, that's great.
You know, the chemistry between the, you know, the guide and the dogs, and then got a chance to meet them and pet them, and it was a lot of fun.
Oh, that's awesome, man.
Yeah, it was really good.
That's Chris Russell with Trey Turner from Winterfest. That'll do it for our show today. Again, the big news, Ryan Zimmerman back with the Nats, 1 year, $2 million, $3 million more possible with incentives as well. That, of course, plate appearances, games played, all that other stuff that fits into the total. It's all pending a physical, but great to have Zim back for at least one more ride with the Washington Nationals. Our thanks to Jim Jester, as always, for his hard work and helping us put the show together. That'll do it for us. We'll be in Annapolis coming up in just a little while. Army-Navy doubleheader today. They will retire the great Courtney Davidson's number in Annapolis, former women's basketball player and all-time leading scorer. And all she's able to do is fly helicopters and airplanes because she's a really talented United States Marine. We'll see you over in Annapolis later on today. Ashew and Lavero are next right here on Sports Radio 106.7 The Fan.